Hello and welcome to our first What the Flick podcast.
Woo!
Something we are kind of maybe calling What the Flick at home.
Perhaps.
Because we are at home. We are at my house.
We're going to call it What the F something because I just spent, or we spent, an hour and a half fighting with the mixing board and the computer and, everybody listening, we put in a lot of work.
We didn't put in a lot of work.
To get this to work.
But Matt did. That's Matt Achety. I'm Christy Lemire. Eventually, Alonzo and Ben will join us for these things. Alonzo is at the Venice Film Festival. Ben's at the Telluride Film Festival.
Right. And we are here in Christy's dining room.
We're at my dining room table. So
yes.
The echoey sound you hear is the glass table.
That is the echo of glamour.
It is. We're very glamorous here in LA. So we are doing this as perhaps a placeholder,
yes.
Perhaps a thing we're going to keep doing for a while. But as you may or may not know, there's no longer a What the Flick show on YouTube.
Right. So What the Flick has been canceled from Young Turks. We're all very sad. And there's been a lot of outpouring about people who are really sad. And, you know, thank you for that because we've enjoyed doing this for a long time.
8.5 years, exactly.
Yeah. And so rest assured, as we've both kind of been saying on social media, we're going to find a way to do this, long term. And it may not be called What the Flick. Who knows? But the four of us will continue to argue about movies. We wanted to make sure that we still had some movies to talk about. So we, in the absence of having a studio to work with, we're recording right now. We may try some video stuff, but we'll get to that eventually.
Yes, we're doing this today. And you guys, today's my birthday. So you get
Happy birthday. Everybody sing with me, all right?
Please sing with me.
In fact, record it and send it to Christy.
I need that.
Happy birthday to Christy. Happy birthday
chicken.
To you.
Thank
Happy
you.
Birthday, dear Christy. Happy birthday to
thank
you.
Thank you. I'm 46, and thank you for joining me on this morning. I'm going to go to the beach with my kid
later. I thought
this
was like
later.
Your fifth 40th birthday.
You were there for my 40th. That was
I
a very different time in my life. Tequila shots were had. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. We're
right.
going to talk about some movies today. Even though it is Labor Day weekend, which would seem like a bit of a dumping ground, there's a lot that's out. And then there are some movies that have been out that Matt and I wanted to get to, especially a movie on Netflix, which a lot of you have seen and loved, called To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Matt, do you want to describe it?
Yeah. To All the Boys I've Loved Before is about a character. They're based on a series of books, and it's about a young girl in high school named Lara Jean Covey. She is one of three sisters. She's the middle sister. Her older sister is about to go off to college or has gone off to college. Her mom passed away when she was very young. They live with their father, played by
John Corbett,
who's pretty funny in this. And she has, you know, she dreams of these kind of bodice ripper type romances, and she has written these letters on her early loves, but never sent them. And her younger sister sends them, and shenanigans ensue. This movie's terrific. I was amazed at this movie. I loved it.
I was too, and there was so much hype about it already before I saw it. We caught this kind of late. I feel like it's been on Netflix for a couple of weeks now. But still, please catch it. All that hype is justified. Lana Condor, who stars as Lara Jean, is just a flat-out star. She's got this wonderful kind of old-school screwball comedy energy to her screen presence. And she's funny and sweet and has great timing. All of the boys, well, especially one of the boys, Peter Kavinsky, played by Noah Centineo, is just charming and feels like kind of an old-fashioned, you know, romantic screen idol. They have really great chemistry. This is very much a teen movie that knows it is a teen movie, and it hits those tropes you expect. You've got the mean girl. You've got awkward situations during PE class. You've got nerds who are maybe more interesting than you expect.
You've got gossip. You've got misunderstandings. But the dialogue is super snappy in this. And it almost felt like one of those old screwball comedies. Like, it flies fast and furious. Their chemistry is just amazing.
It's great, yeah.
Between the two of them. Now, some people may recognize Lana Condor. She plays Jubilee in the last X-Men movie.
I don't remember that.
Or X-Men Apocalypse.
She's in one of them.
Yeah, she's in one of them.
She's adorable. And she's so cute.
There's two more books in this series. I would love them to make more of these.
I bet they will, because it's been a huge hit, and it couldn't have cost that much to make. Yes, Jenny Han is the novelist, and I know it was really important to her when there became interest in her writing. It was really important to her to maintain that character as an Asian woman. Jenny right. Han is Korean, and it was really important to her to maintain that. And it feels very current. It's wonderful between this and Crazy Rich Asians to see Asian characters, Asian stories in genres that are older than time. So right. it feels very new and fresh. There's a great... And speaking of that, this is a movie that is steeped in kind of 80s teen movie culture to the extent that they watch 16 Candles and have a conversation about Long Duk Dong.
Right. Right. They do, you know, the look of this movie is really fun. The fashion's great. Like, everybody's kind of got their own style and look. Lana Condor is just really both, she's really cute and vulnerable, but then she's also really beautiful and kind of smart. And, you know, when, you know, I was talking about the chemistry earlier, like, there's definitely, like, oh, yeah, there's definitely, like, you know, at the risk of sounding skeevy, like, they got older, like, oh, yeah, okay, there's some electricity there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that hot tub scene is,
yeah.
But
they also managed to make that simultaneously innocent and sweet, but also kind of risque and gossipy
right.
in the way things can be at this age in high school.
Right. Right. So. And now, look, like, is there a level of people in this movie, like, this actually, of all movies, this made me think of 10 Things I Hate About You,
okay.
which is, you know, a movie where I think people, you've got high school kids speaking much more intelligently than the average high schooler ever speaks.
Yeah.
But that being said, I really like this movie. And I found it interesting the way the movie shot, like the cinematography, it's like 90% these really like squared on angles. Did you notice that? Like, it's this really like... Rather than shoot things kind of, not that I'm looking for like Dutch angles, for instance, but everything's like these really almost kind of deep focus, really square. Like Laura Jane will be facing the camera and the room behind her is perpendicular.
Oh.
Right. It's almost the way you see in a Wes Anderson movie. Not quite.
So
like
it's
that.
Like symmetrical and centered.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot
very
more.
Centered.
She'll walk across the lacrosse field to go and talk to him. And yeah, you're right. She's like smack in the center of
right.
that shot. And he's smack in the middle of that shot waiting for her in front of the goal.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
That's
a lot of the
point.
Shots are really centered. And rather than, in fact, to the point that a lot, it feels like a lot of the conversations are almost back and forth reverses rather than kind of two shots.
That's a good point.
Which I thought made it really interesting, but I...
It gives it an energy.
Yeah, it definitely does. I love this movie. I think people should see
it. Okay, what's your number?
I give it a 9.5. This is a damn near perfect movie.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 9.4. I agree. It took me a little while to think about the fact that how is this beautiful, vivacious, smart, charming young lady supposed to be a nerd? So you have to kind of suspend some disbelief to believe that she is, like, you know, unpopular.
I mean, come on. I'm beautiful and vivacious, and I was a nerd in high school. Like,
and you blossomed. You got your Peter Kavinsky. So, our number is a 9.5, and it happens to be at 95% on the tomato meter. So, yeah, we recommend this very highly. There's a lot of hype about this movie, and it really justifies all that hype. And Matt and I are not, like, softies. But
right.
And this is, we are both charmed by this. So yes, go see To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Another romantic comedy, which is coming out this Friday in theaters, which is also incredibly charming, is Destination Wedding, which reunites Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder.
So I would think that, you know, for adults, this movie would be the perfect double feature, To All the Boys I Loved Before, because Destination Wedding, so it really is almost entirely... In fact, it is. The dialogue is pretty much exclusively Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. They are two people who meet at an airport the opposite. What's the opposite of a meet cute?
Yeah. But it's still cute the way they don't meet cute.
Right. And they are both attending the same destination wedding in, what was it? Paso Robles?
Paso Robles. Yeah. I mean, they're flying to San Luis Obispo, but the wedding is in Paso Robles, which is like 30 miles away.
Yeah. And these two almost couldn't, you almost couldn't find two more cynical characters. And the dialogue in this comes off very stagey, very much like a play, but they managed to make it work. And sure enough, the conversations go in really interesting places. And I didn't have crazy expectations out of this movie. But as it went on, first of all, the dialogue's hilarious. It's really, I mean, it is so dark and so cynical, especially the stuff that comes out of Keanu Reeves' mouth, but he sells it and it's hilarious. And this is not someone that I would have normally cast in a role like this. Like at times the dialogue feels like some of the way Kevin Smith would write in, say, Clerks or even Mallrats. And I would expect like Jason Lee to say some of this stuff. Right. But Keanu makes it work and I really like this movie.
I really did too, but I didn't have any great expectations for it either, although I like the idea of a romantic comedy with Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. They've been friends for a really long time. They've made a couple of other movies together, including Dracula. 25 years ago. So
what was the other one they made together?
It was A Scanner Darkly? It was one of those Linklater rotoscoped movies. So So they're both really different people. He's like stoic and deadpan and miserable. Right. And she's like hyperverbal, analytical, and miserable.
Right. Like he is, like, look up misanthrope in the dictionary and you're going to find a character like this. Right.
Yeah.
Like he is, you almost couldn't, every time you think, okay, well, he couldn't be any more misanthropic than he is. Sure enough, he is. And she's intelligent. She's not a dingbat, but she's also broken, and she's kind of, I don't want to say crazy, but she's got plenty
of... She's manic.
She's manic, manic, but in a really dark, embittered way, right? And that's a really interesting place for Ryder to go, because you see her be... Like, she's done manic before. She's done broken before. But to bring that level of energy to someone that has nearly the same level of hate and kind of... just cynicism that this that Frank has in this, they really play off each other well. And the other thing I want to add on this is, look, like I had a long talk with my wife about this. It's easy to knock Keanu Reeves' style of acting. And one of the things I've always at least admired about Reeves is that, God love him, he'll try anything, right? But I've always will also maintain that there's a scene in Parenthood that you get a glimpse of what he's capable of. There's that scene in the kitchen, in Diane Weiss' kitchen, he's talking about the house he grew up in. And it's this amazing little moment. And so you see him sell this dialogue, and then there's a moment where, and I texted you about this last night, Christy, there's a moment in the movie where I was just blown away. Like the subtlety that he brings to this one little moment in the movie is just, I found it jaw-dropping. I was really impressed.
Yeah, this must have been really hard for them as actors. It must have been a great challenge, because it truly is just the two of them. Nobody else has any dialogue. And I realized that like a half an hour in, I realized there is nobody else in this movie that has a speaking part. I mean, there are barely any other people in this movie ever. And it does feel like a play on film, and yet you do get a sense of where they are. This part of California is like Central California wine country, and it's very beautiful, but they're both complaining about the fact that they have to schlep to go there, and how selfish of the bride and groom. And each of them has a backstory with the bride and groom that's kind of complicated, and so that's part of why they don't want to be there also. But it's so fast. It's so rat-a-tat, and it's nonstop. And then like an hour in, I thought, how are we going to sustain this? Like, we still have another half an hour to go. Where else are they going to go with this? And yet they keep finding new places. Yeah, I was charmed. I laughed my ass off over and over again.
So funny.
And we should mention, Victor Levin wrote and directed this. This is only his second feature.
Wow.
And even though it's intimate and small in scale, I found this really ambitious. Like, as a writing exercise, as an acting exercise, as a directing exercise, to get so much into this little compact package, I was really impressed by.
And tonally, there's a fair amount of this that feels like, at times, it's almost a similar tone to Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes,
right?
It's so mean.
It's so mean, and the stuff that especially comes out of Frank's mouth is so awful. And yet, Keanu sells it like it's genuine, and that this guy actually believes it. And you know, between the writing and what Keanu brings to the table, like, he brings a humanity to this character that you otherwise would be, you know, in other movies, it'd be easily written off, right? Like, this, it's almost like this Keanu character, Frank, is the villain of some other movie, right? I mean, it's almost like it, you know, makes me think, like, say, William Atherton in Real Genius or Ghostbusters, right? Like, well, what if we actually took that character and made him human, mm-hmm. right? And that's kind of, so it's one of those ones that, like, everybody in this life probably hates this guy. And yet, there's a person there, and, you know...
And you want him to be happy. You know, you root for them to be happy, even though it seems like they're physically incapable
right.
of being happy.
Right, and, you know, they... I was really, really, really impressed with this movie.
Me too. And also, long takes. Really long takes. Like, he will hold a shot of just the two of them sitting at the back of this rinky-dink airplane, and there's just nowhere to go. Like, they have to make that dialogue work and find nooks and crannies and hills and valleys in it. Anyway, I'm really impressed by it. It's modest, but it blew me away. 8.7.
I'm right there with you. 8.5. This is a terrific movie, and go see it.
Our number's at 8.6. It has no score on the tomato meter. I don't know why they are hiding this movie. I don't know why there is an embargo on it, because it's really good. So if Destination Wedding is playing anywhere near you, or if it's streaming, it seems like it'd be a really good movie to stream.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's
streaming.
This is also a movie that, you know, I don't envy the marketing people who have to sell this movie, because I don't know how you sell this movie, right?
Like, it's a mean romantic comedy.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, you can't, you know, it's sharp and it's mean. And again, it's like, it's got tones of, like, Curb Your Enthusiasm, or almost some of the stuff you expect out of, like, not the way the jokes are told and not the writing, but almost that meanness that, like, Sacha Baron Cohen will do, right? Like, this presents itself initially as a really, really mean-spirited movie. And I think it kind of draws you in. And part of that is the directing, and a lot of it is, you know, and we talked about Reeves a lot. Ryder is great in this, too. I think this is some of the best stuff she's done in a long, long time.
Because she has to be super annoying without being totally off-putting.
Right.
And she finds that kind of sweet spot in the middle.
Right. And she's manic, but without being flighty and dopey. And, you know, there's points where Frank will call out her what he sees as, you know, either hypocrisy or just, you know, ridiculousness, and she'll totally acknowledge it. And, you know, she's like, yeah, okay, fine, don't care. Right. And she's aware and comfortable with her own mania, and which I thought was a really interesting choice, because I think in a lot of movies it's easy to just do the, you know, this is almost like the manic nightmare pixie girl, right?
Manic pixie nightmare girl.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's like the manic pixie nightmare woman. This is what happens when the manic pixie dream girl doesn't get, you know, the happy ending with the guy. And this is the manic pixie dream girl, you know, after she's been left at the altar and
anyway, it's really good. So go find it. Also this week is a documentary about John McEnroe. Which I will describe.
Yeah, it's kind of a documentary.
It's
Why don't you
is.
Tell us
it's
about this movie?
It's called John McEnroe in the Realm of Perfection. And imagine if Jean-Luc Godard made a documentary about tennis. This is what it might look like. Because it is playful with form and structure and narration and graphics. And it's about John McEnroe, kind of. I mean, he's... The guy who provides the through line, and eventually it it takes us to the 1984 men's final at the French Open when McEnroe played Yvon Lendl.
But it's not about the filmmaker that was working on those films, the French filmmaker that was working on these kind of sports, kind of how-to, like training films, and McEnroe was the last one he did. And it's as much about that filmmaker as it is about McEnroe.
And it's about tennis as theater. It's about sport as theater. It's about sport as an opportunity for spectators to take part in, you know, the inherent artificiality of this process. Even though, yes, the stakes are real, and yes, the wins and losses and the sweat and the training and the toil and torment are real, like, just the stage of the French Open and how certain camera angles are achieved in covering it, and it's about the mechanics of McEnroe's serve and how extreme his, you know, he would turn his entire back to the court, and, you know, how fast his left arm would, like, whip around behind him to get to the top of the serve. And it plays with graphics on the screen, and it plays with John McEnroe's influence in pop culture. When I didn't realize this at all, this is fascinating to me. When Tom Hulce was preparing to play Mozart in Amadeus, that he looked to John McEnroe as his inspiration. And in retrospect, that makes absolute sense, because here is somebody who is brilliant, who is polarizing and misunderstood and, like, clearly a genius and far and away beyond everybody else in his field, and yet also kind of hated and
the bad boy that
the unfall tree.
You like this more than I did. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in here, I think. Not the least of which is, you know, there's a segment where they talk about how over the years, as the French Open would get more and more coverage, the documentarians would get crowded out for the kind of TV coverage. And at one point, this filmmaker is offered, like, well, just use all of our video footage that we're doing. And he was incensed because he's not. And so it's this, you know, there's part of this movie that's a really interesting primer on how this filmmaker was working. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but
Gilles de something. The guy who was the original, like, he did the instructional videos.
Right.
I'll look it up. It's like Gilles de something. Go ahead.
And they talk to him, and they kind of go through a lot of his archive footage that you know, they get a lot of his footage that had ended up on the cutting room floor that he hadn't used. And he talks through his process, and some of the people he worked with had talked through their process. And so it's this interesting look at the way they're focused on the movement, and they're not at all focused on the results of a match, the way a broadcast camera and kind of production entity would be set up to show an audience at home, like, hey, who's winning, who's not winning. This was, we want to study McEnroe's movement. And so in that context, it was really interesting to see, okay, sometimes we're focusing just on his torso or just on his feet, or, you know, we'll have these, you know, you get to see these long takes of, you know, almost like full frame close up shots of McEnroe just volleying back and forth during a match. And you don't ever see what the shots are. You don't, you know, sometimes you don't see him hit the ball. You just see his face. And so that's really interesting. And then it tilts into this kind of study of who McEnroe was and how his fury kind of informed his playing. But there's a lot of disparate pieces here, but I felt like it struggled to kind of come together as one.
Gilles de Kermadec is the guy we're talking about, who at the, you know, the very beginning, his instructional videos are the basis for all of this. Yeah, but I appreciate that it does not necessarily try to psychoanalyze McEnroe. It's nothing at all like...
Well, until it does start to.
I don't know that it does, though. I mean, only a little bit, in that it touches on his brilliance and his impatience with everybody else around him who does not rise to his level. But that's superficial. I mean, that's clear from anybody who's ever even heard his name, that he's a perfectionist and he's driven and he's impatient. You see a lot of him fighting with, like, the referee, you know, notoriously combative, and people booing him. but you see it at a distance and you hear the audio at a distance. So we're still at a remove and there's still like a recognition of the artificiality of this entire process. Well, you know, it's not trying to get into his head and get close to him.
Right. And then there's that one scene where they've dubbed over De Niro from Raging Bull, right?
That was funny.
That scene with Joe Pesci's like, "Did you sleep with my wife?" Right. And like they've it's synced up almost perfectly. You know, and there's a lot of, like, interest, you know, again, I think that this is a fascinating film for the various pieces, but ultimately, like, I felt like it kind of struggled to come together cohesively.
I dug it. I thought it was ambitious and strange, and I never knew where it was going in terms of, it kept surprising me. It's really unlike any other kind of sports documentary or any kind of sports biography. We had Borg McEnroe recently with Shia LaBeouf playing John McEnroe, which went into his childhood and his demanding father. And this isn't interested in understanding him as much as it wants to delve into the spectacle and the persona of him. And what does that mean in terms of the theatricality of all of this? So, and the music is great. It's everything from Sonic Youth to the Ramones to Mozart. It's really playful and in sneaky ways. So I'm giving it a 9. I really liked it.
Yeah, I didn't. I think it's interesting and worth watching. I'm only going to give it a 7.
Though. Okay, our number's an 8. It's at 89% on the tomato meter. I'm not sure where it's opening, but it's opening this weekend, at least in LA. So please go find it. And then what's our last one?
Last film is Operation Finale, which stars Oscar Isaac and Sir Ben Kingsley. And why don't you tell us about it? Because I didn't see it.
I went to a matinee of it yesterday. This opened on Wednesday, and it's really being hidden. It's very strange, given the pedigree of this film, given who all is in it, you know, in front of and behind the camera. I mean, there are ads on television for this movie, but it's being sneaked into theaters on August 29th, a Wednesday before Labor Day weekend, so I'm not sure why they're hiding it like that. But it is based on the true story of the Operation to track down and put on trial Adolf Eichmann, who was the architect of the Final Solution. And when Hitler and everybody else, all the top Nazi people, killed themselves to avoid prosecution, Eichmann fled Germany and went to Argentina and lived in hiding for like a decade. And then it was discovered that he was there. Mossad puts together a team. Oscar Isaac is their leader. And Melanie Laurent is part of it. It's a bunch of, they put together a team and they go to Buenos Aires to kidnap Eichmann, played by Ben Kingsley, played chillingly by Ben Kingsley. And killing him is not enough. He needs to stand trial for his crimes. He needs to answer to 6 million people. And so they want to bring him back on an El Al flight. There are only so many flights at this point. It's like 1960. Only so many planes that can get that far from Israel to Buenos Aires.
Right, because it's not like, you know, it's not like you could just get on a commercial flight and fly, you know, get on a commercial flight. Oh, we'll fly through the U.S. We'll fly through wherever, right? Like, that's not going to
happen. We'll stop at DFW and refuel. No, it's not like that's going to happen. So it's about how do we get in? How do we catch him? How do we hold on to him? How do we get him back to Israel? And as time goes on, there are hiccups along the way, and how do they handle those? Along the way, too, Oscar Isaac and Ben Kingsley kind of strike up, if not a friendship, at least a mutual appreciation for each other. They both kind of get under each other's skin, and you just never know. Ben Kingsley is just chilling in this, and you never know what he is going to do, what's genuine, what's not. The two of them, when it's just the two of them acting opposite each other, it's like a masterclass. It's riveting. The two of them are so good, very different styles. And I think Oscar Isaac is just great in everything, and he's so versatile. This is a really well-made film. Chris White directed this, which is very strange. You know, he did About a Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? American Pie, About a Boy. And then The Golden Compass, which sucked.
There's
right?
worse movies than The Golden
and,
Compass.
Yeah, and he did the second Twilight movie, which is also not good.
That's not a good one.
Isn't that one of the ones with the like cheesy, fake talking werewolves? I believe it was.
Yes.
Anyway, but like, Alexandra,
as opposed to the super real.
No, the ones that are much more believable. Like Alexandra Desplat did the score, and it's riveting, and it puts you on edge from the very beginning. Javier Aguirre Sorobe did the cinematography. He's like a longtime Spanish cinematographer, worked with Almodovar and Woody Allen and, you know, accomplished veteran people. This looks great in every level, like production-wise. It shot beautifully. It's tense. It's just, it's solid. It's a really solid, like, historical drama thriller. I don't know that it's necessarily astonishing in any way, but it does what it does very well. If this is a topic that interests you, I would say go see it and go see it in a theater. Chris wanted to go with me, and he's like, oh, how was it? If this is a topic that interests me, I'm like, I'm going to go see it while you're gone. So too bad. But, you know, I really liked it, and I just... I don't love it. Like, maybe it's just they felt like it's not so good that it's award season worthy, and that's why they're not putting it out like October.
Right.
But it's not so bad right. that
it's worth seeing these two guys get together.
And everybody. It's a great cast all around. So,
what's your score?
Like a 7.3.
Okay.
Like it's really solid. Yeah. I mean, on Labor Day weekend. You could do worse. So I think it's opening nationwide.
Okay.
It's open now. It came out on Wednesday. So okay. So our movie this week, again, from the top, we talked about To All the Boys I've Loved Before. We both loved it. Gave it a 9.5. Destination Wedding with Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. We gave it an 8.6. John McEnroe in the Realm of Perfection. We gave it an 8. And I saw Operation Finale, and I'm giving it a 7.3. So, is that it for us this week?
I think that's us, unless we want to talk about what our home video picks were going to be this week.
I don't know. I don't remember what mine were.
Oh, mine were two movies that are coming to streaming that are not new releases to home video, but one of them was, I think it's on Amazon Prime or Netflix, Silverado, the Lawrence Kasdan Western. I love that movie. Absolutely love that movie. Super fun, great dialogue, great chemistry between the leads. It's Scott Glenn and a very young Kevin Costner and Danny Glover and Kevin Kline. And this is the movie that introduced Kevin Kline and what's his name from Monty Python, who did Fish Called Wanda.
Michael Palin.
Not Palin. Well, yeah, John Cleese.
John Cleese yes.
met Kevin Kline on okay. this film, and it inspired Cleese to write the part in Fish Called Wanda for Kevin Kline. So,
which is brilliant. Which is like brilliant. Peak Kevin Kline.
Yeah, so I like this one, and then my other pick was this crazy, over-the-top, really dopey, almost comic booky Jet Li movie from the early 90s called Black Mask.
Where he
plays like this super soldier that has like left the business, and then a bunch of super soldiers start bumming around Hong Kong, defeating the triads, and he's got to come back and kill everyone. And it's really dumb, but the action's great.
Cool. I have no idea what I picked. I don't remember.
Okay. Then.
So watch Matt's picks.
Yeah.
And I guess at some point we'll have theme music.
Maybe.
Should we have a song or something? Can we change songs?
Probably.
Anyway, until then, we'll do it again. Want to do it again next week?
Sure.
Because now we know how the equipment works.
Maybe.
Thank you for coming over.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. And, you know, let us know what you think.
We are here for you. This has been What the Flick at Home, kinda. We'll see you soon. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.